Well, thank you very much, Brian, and it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon to explain to you, if I can, a little of what NBN Co is doing. But first, perhaps if I can start with a little background information. We are a government business enterprise, for those of you who don't know. That means our shareholder is the Commonwealth Government. We have two shareholder ministers, the Minister for Communications, Senator Conroy, and the Minister for Finance, Minister Tanner. So, as Brian mentioned, our job is to roll out this network, to design, build, roll out, maintain this network. It really is about implementing government policy. And while my background is in the commercial world, I was in the commercial world for 35 years. In fact, most of the people in the company we now have were in the commercial world for that long. We now are reorienting ourselves. Our job is not to necessarily maximise the bottom line. The job is to implement government policy as efficiently and as effectively as we can. So that's the job we've got to do. And that policy is to roll out a national broadband network to all of Australia, to at least 90% of premises using fibre to the premise. In fact, the percentage will go up a little bit. And for the remainder, to provide them with the best possible service we can, either using wireless or satellite services. I should say right up front, and perhaps preempt some questions if we get any on commerciality, this is not a normal commercial venture. Okay, a normal commercial entity would not do this job. What they would do is what all of us would do if we're running a business and trying to maximise the bottom line. We would go and pick off those areas where there are high densities and customers who can pay the most. This is not what the job's about. Our job for NBN Co is to get broadband right across the nation. The reason the government has set that objective is, as the folks in the government firmly believe, there are economic and social benefits that will result from rolling out this network that wouldn't necessarily fall directly to the bottom line of NBN Co. So we're getting on with the job now. Last month we announced an initial 70 million contract for the supply of our GPON active equipment, the stuff that lights up the fibre on each end. It's part of, in fact, a bigger frame equipment. We'll probably end up spending between $1 billion and $1.5 billion on this type of active equipment. We announced a short list of some 21 construction companies that we will plan to use around the nation. And we are going to employ directly in the work that will be done in construction a very large number of people, as you can imagine. Probably in the 20,000 to 25,000 people will be involved in the construction once it really gets going. We announced also last week the location of our national operations and test facility in Melbourne, which seemed to be reported we'd moved the headquarters there. In fact, we haven't moved the headquarters anywhere because we have assiduously avoided naming any place as a headquarters. Although we have been asked a few times. And as you might have noticed, yesterday we announced our second release sites. These are the next 19 sites around the country that we will be fibering. And I'll explain to you a little bit later on what that means. And later this month, we expect to officially launch the turning on of the first services in Tasmania. And as you've probably seen, there's some of those people who are using the service in Tasmania and couldn't wait for the launch and got onto Whirlpool and were telling lots of people what they thought about the sorts of speeds they're getting over fibre. And I think it's fair to say they were pretty happy, from what we've seen, which is, I think, is good news. The job we have to do that's in front of us now is be made a little easier by the fact that we just signed what for us is a $9 billion heads of agreement with Telstra. There's another $2 billion that's related to things that Telstra put value on that the government will be doing. But to me, that I always thought this would make good sense to arrange such a deal. Because there's a bunch of infrastructure that Telstra have, which we can help monetize, so it's good for them, and it's also good for that. NBN Co, we can get it done more cheaply and more effectively, digging out less roads, which I think is a good thing for the country. And it also simultaneously fulfills one of the big things that the government was trying to do, which is to produce some industry restructuring after many years of having an industry structure that most people were not too happy with. So having said that as background, I'd like perhaps before I just move into some slides is just acknowledge the important work that the South Australian government has done in conjunction with the federal government and local government and industry and communities in South Australia. There's a number of very significant projects that are benefiting the state. In fact, I believe there's some $7 million being allocated by the South Australian government, which has then been leveraged to produce investments in telecoms and projects that I think comes to about $40 million total. So they were clearly, those projects were launched to meet the pressing needs of the communities in South Australia and to fill some of the black spots that occurred. We expect and hope to be able to work with those companies who have done that. We're trying to be completely cognizant of the infrastructure that already exists around the country, but nevertheless we do have to build what the government has asked us to build and fulfil the objectives that they've set for us. So we expect to be working hand in hand with people around Australia, companies, as we look at that infrastructure. I'm going to concentrate not so much on the fibre, but more on the wireless and the satellite side of it. And the reason for being so is I'm well aware that here in South Australia, the population is in fact much more widely distributed. In other words, your population densities are not anywhere near as high as they are in some places. So I understand that wireless and satellite will be very important in South Australia. And I want to tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing there. But first, perhaps if I can turn to fibre, and I'll just spend a few moments on that. This is what are called fibre serving areas, and I'll explain what those are. But every one of those dots means that we've got a centre in which we can fan out, probably out to about 15 kilometres maximum fibre, and pick up a whole bunch of premises. Those fibre serving areas can be anything from a few hundred people who are served, a few hundred premises, up to tens of thousands, you know, potentially 70,000. At the moment, with our planning, what we've been doing up to now in planning the network, we had worked out we'd need about 700 or so fibre serving areas. But with the deal that we've now done with Telstra, it could well be that we, in fact, increase the number of those fibre serving areas if we manage to convert the heads of agreement, which is a non-binding heads of agreement, into a definitive binding heads of agreement. It could well be that we increase the number of fibre serving areas. That means there's a lot of fibre going to be rolled out all around the country. We'll be doing, once the rollout gets going, some 4,000 premises a day. So that's why we'll need quite a number of people. This is what it will look like on the ground. You can see there up in the top right-hand corner, this is where we have, this is the centre of a fibre serving area. And from there, there's pieces of equipment called optical line terminals. The fibre spreads out from those, comes down to those little yellow boxes, like the yellow up there, yellow boxes, called fibre distribution hubs. And in those sit a bunch of splitters, which you then go out and run fibres out to every home. Now, what that means, or every premise, what that means is that you can, you're using one fibre to go out to the fibre distribution hubs and then split it 32 ways, even potentially up to 64. Now, when I say one, I mean there's obviously hundreds of them going out from these fibre distribution hubs, but they go out and then they're split, which means there is you're using the one fibre for a long way out and then you split that fibre. You can increase, we've set the dimensioning of this so you can do about 100 megabits per second to every one of those premises, but I've asked the question, isn't this stuff now totally redundant? You can only go to 100 megs and Google has announced a gigabit per second and you're going to get left behind. The fact is, we just need to reduce the splitting ratio and this same infrastructure can do exactly the same thing. Or you just upgrade the equipment that goes on the end. So this kind of infrastructure is going to have a very long life. The capacity on the fibre itself is huge. It can carry enormous capacity. So there is no limit to that. And the fact is, it is glass. Which means it doesn't have the problems in metallic conduction, so it should be very stable and last a very long time. So it really is a national asset once it's all built. You can see from the diagram there we'll be going underground and above ground, and with the deal, if we consummate it with Telstra, we will be using a fair number of their underground ducts where they're available. Just a little more detail, and I won't go into this too much. It's all modular, we build up. So we start from the left-hand side there, looking at the premises, a network access point, We then do what's called a fibre distribution area, which is about 200 premises, and then we put 200 of those premises into a 4x4 grid, and we have fibres going around different ways so that we have redundancy, and then 24 of those fibre serving area modules you put together into a fibre serving area. And that could be, if you do the arithmetic on that, you multiply 200 by 16 by 24, you get to 76,800, which is the maximum size we have. Now, when we talked about the second release sites we announced, what we announced there was where we're going to locate some fibre serving areas and where we're going to build out from those. And you can see on these are nice symmetrical patterns, but when you actually go to lay them on the ground, you find they don't work out as those nice hexagons or squares. You need to take account of topography and boundaries and water courses and all sorts of things and population densities. So here's Adelaide. These are the real fibre-serving areas that we are planning for around Adelaide. And the other point I want to make on this is there are no nice boundaries. People assume sometimes that we're going to go out with fibre, and then we are going to, from there, do wireless, and from there, do satellite, as you get further out into regional Australia. It doesn't work that way. What you can see here is the fibre areas, so the islands of fibre, and then between those, there may be areas of wireless, and then some places, even relatively close to the city, may have to be served with satellite. And that's just the reality. So there's no clear and neat boundary between these three technologies. That's the way it is. So in South Australia, the first and second release sites that we talked about is Wollonga was our first release site, a town just down to the south there. And then we've announced yesterday Seaford, Modbury and Prospect. And I realise that this picture isn't exactly correct. I don't think we've located the dots quite right. So here is what it really should look like. So Wollonga, in fact, just hasn't quite made it. It's a little, as I understand it, it's just down to the right, a little lower there than the Seaford and McLaren Vale. But they are the sites now that we have got in South Australia that we are expecting to put fibre in. And the intention is each one of those is one of those pictures you saw. We're going to put a fibre serving area module in each one of these, which means about 3,000 premises. The maximum will be 3,200. So in Wollonga, we've already located one. For these next three second release sites, we're going to be talking to the local councils in those areas to say, look, we've picked this fibre serving area. Now, this is where we think we should put the boundary around those 3,000 premises. What do you think? And we learned from the first release sites that when we had put those boundaries, the local council said, well, this is great that you're here, but we wish you to just move this a street this way or a street that way to pick up this or that. So that's what we want to have a discussion with them about. So that was the fibre. The wireless coverage now is you can see those grey dots. Now they're not cell sites, they're coverage area. There may be multiple cell sites within those coverage areas. And you can also see from that, while I haven't shown the fibre clearly, the fibre paths, you can clearly see some of those dots seem to be following something. Well, what they're following is that fibre paths that we're going to have all around the country. And the intention is we'll probably have something like 2,000 cell sites around the country, and those cell sites we hope to reuse whatever infrastructure is available, if it is available. And so we're once again using what's there if we can. What the wireless will look like, and it's not too different. We're going to have Ethernet switches, just like in we had in the centre of the fibre areas. You go out into a wireless access node to a base station, and then the person in the home or in the premise will have a wireless network termination unit. Now, what I want to make a distinction about is this is fixed wireless. It's a fixed wireless service. It is not a mobile service. It will not give you a service to your iPhone or your mobile phone or anything like that. It is not that. It is a fixed wireless service. The whole aim of this is to provide a service as close as we can to the fibre service But the last bit of it just happens to be using spectrum rather than fibre. Now, because we've got to use that spectrum, because it's just so expensive to get it out these distances, we do need to modify the product slightly. Clearly, we can't do 100 megabits per second. It has to be dimensioned a little differently. But what we are trying to do is make sure that we overcome some of the issues that you have in normal mobile networks. In other words, if you're in the wireless coverage area, it shouldn't be variable in terms of speed. The performance you get at the edge of the cell should be just about the same as what you get in the centre of the cell. Now, we can do that by not using some of the fancy adaptive coding and modulation techniques that mobile networks use to try and squeeze the last bit out towards the edge of the cell to keep people kind of hanging on there. So we'll try and give a reasonably good service all the way out. We will also, while we're using spectrum, and spectrum is limited, that's just a fact of life. Spectrum, unlike fibre, which has almost unlimited capacity, spectrum is very limited. You get so many megahertz of bandwidth, and you can only put so many megabits per second in those megahertz of bandwidth. What we are going to be doing is we're going to be dimensioning this network very differently from a mobile network. We'll be dimensioning it to carry at least an order of magnitude more traffic than a mobile network will carry today. And as you know, with mobile networks, the further you get out from the cell site, the slower the speed goes. The more people come onto the network, the sharing the spectrum, the slower it will get. That's particularly important as people are using more and more video, which is happening now. That video really puts a demand on networks. So that's the wireless. Now on to the satellite. And this is illustrated spot beam map. There's a lot of work still to be done on what we will be planning around a satellite, but clearly we're going to cover the whole country with satellite. And often people, when they see this map, say, well, why is it over the eastern seaboard there, the eastern seacoast? What on earth do we need satellite there? Well, the fact is, even within 40 or 50 kilometres of Sydney and Melbourne, there are places you really can only get to with satellite. Simply because the fibre is too difficult to get to them, and the terrain is such that you just can't get the propagation in the wireless signal effectively and get a reliable service. So our intention is to provide a satellite service to do that, and there is simply is nowhere near enough capacity in today's satellite services over Australia to provide the sort of service we're talking about, which is once again is trying to be close to the wireless service and get at least 12 megabits per second peak and be able to do a lot of bandwidth that's available to you, committed bandwidth. So what we're planning to do is launch two Ka-band satellites. So we'll put two Ka-band satellites up there. You potentially could do it with one, but the trouble is if we have some 200,000 premises on a satellite, they take roughly 4 years to design, build, launch, get into orbit. And so if one of them just, you know, it's very unlikely, but it's possible, gets hit by a piece of space junk or other, I don't want to wake up in the morning and find there's 200,000 people without a service and it'll take 4 years to restore it. So I think I get probably a call from our shareholder ministers if that was to occur. So our intention is to have two satellites and for redundancy purposes, in the same way as we build redundancy into the fibre network and the wireless network, we have redundancy. We have a number of gateways, probably approximately 10 gateways. We have two large antennas per gateway, two satellites, which means then we have some redundancy so we can switch over. And we're just looking at the engineering aspects now of is it possible to have something clever in the smaller dishes that are at the premises so they can effectively point at both satellites so you can switch over very fast. And clearly we can use both satellites at once, which gives us more capacity. And we are dimensioning the capacity on the satellites with these new generation satellites. You can get satellites now that have very high capacities in the 30, 40, 50, even approaching 100 gigabits per second capacity on a satellite. But I should say, and we've got to be realistic in this, these are very sophisticated satellites, probably $500 million or so each to build and put up there. But it still is using spectrum. And in this case, there's a limited amount of spectrum. And so the capacity on a satellite like this is about 2% of the capacity we'll have in a fibre serving area. Okay. So that gives you a feel for the difference between a wireless technology and a fibre technology. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're still trying to figure out how we may solve the double hop problem, because we'd like people to be able to use this for voice as well as broadband. But if you've got a satellite, you've got to go up to the satellite and back, and then back to say hello. You say hello to someone up and back, and the fact is these things are 36,000 kilometres up because they're in geostationary orbit, and there's not much we've managed to do about the speed of light. We're staying at the same speed as it always was. No matter what objectives the government set for us, we can't manage to change it. So we're trying to see how we can engineer a best possible solution we can around that one. So now if I can, just turn into applications, and I'm not going to talk about all the usual stuff. Downloading, you know, entertainment videos, which is quite exciting, by the way. I was involved in the IPTV rollout in AT&T in the US, and it is a new type of television. It is one in which you can get, it really is personalised television. In other words, you want to see a particular channel at the time you want to see it and what you want to see. You're not limited to picking a selection out of half a dozen or a dozen channels, or as it was in the US, a selection out of 400 channels. You can actually go and get the content you want. It's like going to the video store, except you don't have to move. Go and scan the libraries and down it comes. And companies in Australia are already looking at this and starting to, I don't know if you've seen them, Fetch TV is one of them. They're starting to bring a new product on. But this one, I won't talk so much about those. These types of applications, this is one where you're talking about smart cities and smart metering. And here it's not so much the bandwidth that's available as it is the ubiquity. In other words, the networks are going everywhere. And that's something that people often forget. It's not all just about speed. It's the fact that it goes everywhere. When it comes to these type of applications, or to health applications or education applications, it's more the ubiquity that's very important than necessarily just the speed. But in this particular application, which one I'm personally involved in, I'm a director of a neuroscience research institute, and we looked at an application where people who have had strokes and are trying to be rehabilitated, it's a big deal for some of them people, for those people, to come into the centres to undertake the exercise. And it's actually quite expensive for the health system, because the health system, when somebody's been injured with a stroke, they have to organise transport, they've got to organise all sorts of things, and they can be kept waiting long time when they get to the hospitals. But if you have a high-speed connection into their home with relatively cheap applications, in this case we were using a Wii, so you can follow their movements. And what's very important in stroke rehabilitation is that people do particular movements. So the doctors can track the movements, they have a two-way high-definition video system so they can look at the people doing the exercises and say, no, that's not quite right, do it this way, and they can monitor their progress. This is just one of dozens of type of applications that health professionals are beginning to think about that you can do when you not only have these sorts of speeds, but when you have it everywhere, so that you have the critical mass to actually develop these applications and get some cheap cameras. And for old people, you can think about people, you know, with the aging population, with dementia becoming more prevalent in our society, really simple terminals so that they can just press a button and be connected with health carers almost straight away in a high definition two-way video. It is quite exciting about the potential savings that in the health system and education. But just one I'll flip back to if I can. We're using, this is in fact our video conferencing facility in Sydney. We are now regularly not getting on planes between Sydney and Melbourne, but using video conferencing. And for those of you who haven't used it, you have three big high-definition screens. The system's set up so that it's very low latency. You don't have any delay. It really is like being in the same room. And we think this type of application is going to really take off. It needs a lot of bandwidth. It's a little difficult to do this over either the copper network or the wireless network. It's just you can't do this kind of stuff. But what you can do is, it in fact may help solve our problem of some of our transport problems and road congestion problems, particularly in Sydney, where if you can have these types of facilities and communications and the price gets driven down, no longer will people need to get in cars. They really can collaborate from home. Really can be like part of the team. It's what it really does feel like when you're using these. So one last point I just want to make is we are in danger, I believe, in Australia of falling behind the world
And this is some data from the Fibre to the Home Council as of, in fact, recent data, 2010 data, in the last few months. It just shows what the fibre penetration rates are in key economies. There's been also an OECD paper that was written just in December 2009 showing what the effect is of, or projection affected effect of fibre to the premises on health and education, and the even tiny incremental cost savings that you get in Western economies from health and education will pay for fibre rollouts over lengths of time. Now, it isn't something a commercial entity would do because it doesn't think in those sorts of time frames. All of us who have been in publicly listed companies having to do earnings call every 3 months, we know those kind of earnings calls kind of focus you on the next 3 months. It's very difficult to plan over decades. That's why it is a government that needs to do these types of things. And that's what's happening around the world. Governments are putting money and investments increasingly into fibre infrastructures. And you can see in here, some of those are occurring. Unfortunately, Australia doesn't even hit the map yet. Now, Slovenia makes it, but we're not yet on the map. So hopefully, a few years into our rollout, we'll be very rapidly coming up this graph. And what's more importantly, it's not all about just being, you know, in high up on the charts in on a worldwide basis. I really do believe it'll make a fundamental difference to the social and economic well-being of the nation, which is why I think it's such an important project. Thank you.